This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest. I'm Tishao Ig. Angelique Jacobs is in the studio with me this hour. Today, the 19th of August, was designated World Humanitarian Day by the United Nations to honor humanitarian personnel and those who have lost their lives working for humanitarian causes. This year, as the whole world grapples with the COVID-19 pandemic, the contributions of aid and health workers worldwide are more important than ever. To commemorate the day, we are going to look at what humanitarian work involves and how to pursue a career in this field.
Yes, and as we know, humanitarian aid can take many forms, including food, healthcare, shelter, or even education. And amidst this pandemic, we're going to dive into how organizations are continuing to operate and provide medical aid during these times and what drives these organizations and its people to continue to do so. So, you know, as we mentioned, it is World Humanitarian Day. So we are asking you over on Twitter, and we have a poll running. So we're asking you, do you support or help any humanitarian organizations? So the options are, yes, I donate. Yes, I volunteer. No, or no, but I'd like to. So do tweet us your responses. You know, let us know what you do or don't do. Tell us why as well. Tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899.
Yes. So some background on World Humanitarian Day. It is a United Nations designated day to recognize humanitarian personnel and those who have lost their lives working for humanitarian causes. And this year in particular, the jobs of aid workers around the world has become even more challenging. As I said, we are continuing to battle the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. So according to the UN statement, this year, World Humanitarian Day comes as the world continues to fight the COVID-19 pandemic over recent months. Aid workers are overcoming unprecedented access hurdles to assist people in humanitarian crises in 54 countries, as well as in a further 9 countries, which have been catapulted into humanitarian need by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Hence why this year the theme of World Humanitarian Day has fittingly been set as Real Life Heroes. And it focuses on paying tribute to these real life heroes who have continued helping others and protecting lives despite the conflict, the insecurity, you know, lack of access and the risks linked to COVID-19. And this can sometimes be in the most extreme circumstances throughout the world. So take, for instance, you know, the recent explosion in Beirut. Not only are aid workers there currently dealing with the aftermath of the blast, but they are doing so in a country in the midst of a severe economic crisis following a civil war, and added to that, the huge risks posed by the coronavirus.
And the history of today's designation itself goes back to the dangers often faced by those doing humanitarian work. World Humanitarian Day has its roots in the tragic deaths of 22 people. So back in August, 19th August 2003, a bomb attack on the Canal Hotel in Baghdad, Iraq, killed 22 people. This included UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Sergio Vieira de Mello and 20 of his colleagues. So de Mello, who is from Brazil, had served 30 years with the UN and had been on many challenging humanitarian missions. Prior to his death, in fact, he had been considered a likely candidate for UN Secretary General. So in 2009, the UN General Assembly formalized the date of the bombing as World Humanitarian Day in memory of those who lost their lives that day.
Yes, and as I said earlier, you know, this year the focus is on inspiring personal stories of humanitarians, all brought together under the hashtag Real Life Heroes. And if you go to worldhumanitariandaya.org, you'll find many stories of these everyday heroes highlighting the vital work that they do. As the website says, and I quote, "Around the world, many people have grown up with local stories of fictional heroes, from folktales to fantasy epics. Humanitarians didn't appear in those stories, but this year we bring these unsung heroic stories to life."
Yes, so the entire campaign is put together by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, and they've really used some innovative ways to tell these stories, specifically as online comics. So they collaborated with comic book writer Arvid Nelson and a host of artists from around the world, and the website highlights the stories of humanitarian workers in very beautifully illustrated comic panels. It's a really wonderful way to merge the idea of comic book heroes with with real life ones. Hmm. So some of the stories that the comics tell include that of Dr. Marie Rosalind Darnica Belizaire, who as a field worker with WHO helped lead the Ebola response in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And that was really amidst a series of violent attacks. And then there's a story of Dr. Debrina Dewi Lumano, who has provided medical aid in Indonesia during earthquakes, floods and volcanic eruptions. And then here's my favorite, the story of Ismail and the Barikama Food Collective in Italy. And that collective aims to prevent exploitation of agricultural workers, and they also provided food aid to housebound Italians during the pandemic lockdown. And finally, there's a story about entomologist Dr. Mohamed Hassan Mohamud, who is working on the response to the devastating locust invasion in Somalia, which is causing massive food insecurity in the country. Actually, these four that I mentioned are just a few. There are lots more that you can read. Yeah, they are stories. They are visual stories, and the art is really beautiful.
Yes, I saw it, and I think accompanying the comics are also more in-depth stories as well, right? Yeah. So you get the whole story behind it. And, you know, just looking at it, there's just so many different crises. You know, it takes on so many different forms, you know, these workers are responding in so many different ways. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, the entomologist one was really interesting as well.
Yeah,
yeah. So, but perhaps because the work of these heroic individuals is so wide-ranging, as we said, it can be quite difficult for the layperson to understand what a humanitarian is, or it might seem like something that's very far removed from our own day-to-day jobs. But humanitarian work does not only have to be on a large scale, and it is well within the reach of the average person should you choose to do it. After all, when you look at the definition of a humanitarian, it is often defined as, I quote, a person who seeks to promote human welfare or doing work that has an active belief in the value of human life.
Yes, and meanwhile, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, outlines four principles to guide all humanitarian work, which are humanity, neutrality, impartiality and independence. And briefly, you know, here's what each of these means. So humanity means, you know, human suffering must be addressed wherever it is found. Mm-hmm. For neutrality, humanitarian actors must not take sides in hostilities or engage in controversies of a political, racial, religious or ideological nature. And for impartiality, the work must be carried out based on need alone, without distinction on the basis of nationality, race, gender, religion, class or politics. And finally, independence. Humanitarian action must be autonomous from political, economic or military objectives.
Yep. So to bring all this closer to home and to hear about work being done here in Malaysia, as well as how you can get yourselves involved, we have on the line Danusha Katriona Singh, Managing Director of Seoul 24/7 Foundation. Thanks for joining us, Danusha. To start with, could you briefly explain the kind of humanitarian work that Seoul 24/7 Foundation does?
Sure. The humanitarian work we are involved in are basically focused through four main pillars. That's our education, renewable energy, mental health, and technology pillars. Each one of the programs and projects that we run would fall under one or more of these pillars. But the main thing that we're trying to focus on is actually to serve, educate, and empower Malaysian communities. We do have a lot of programs, but for the sake of time, I'll just highlight four of our main ones. The one that's closest to my heart is actually the SALS Academy of Innovation, which is in KL, or SALS AI. This is actually a 12-month full training and boarding scholarship program for youths 17 years old and above. We work with mostly Orang Asli and Orang Asal youth there, but of course we do have Indian, Malay and Chinese. And under SALS AI, we also have SALS Tech, which is a program where we accept donated digital devices and we refurbish it to reduce e-waste in society. Another program we run is the Community Center program. This is an education and social empowerment program that takes education directly to the grassroots communities. So we actually place teachers in communities for a minimum of 12 months. And then one more that we do, which is in the mental health pillar, is SALS Health, run by my colleague Alicia Ottoman. SALS Health is a behavioral health center, and what they do is they connect clients to accessible individual, family or community mental health practitioners, and they provide services to combat mental health stigma in Malaysia. And the last one, the last program that we run is NGO Hub. That's run by my colleague, Chun Wahoo. And that's an online and offline platform which is dedicated to NGOs. So they coordinate crowdfunding, they connect NGOs to information, training, resources, grants, and they also serve as a connecting place between different NGOs in Malaysia to actually come together and solve society's problems together.
And what was your own path into humanitarian work, Danusha?
It's an interesting story, but the big plunge into humanitarian work happened for me when I quit my job and I went to Timor Leste or East Timor to become a volunteer teacher. Thankfully, at that time, accommodation and food was covered by the organization that I was volunteering with, and I had the blessings of my parents, which honestly, shout out to them because they really allowed me to try new things and they trusted me when I wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. So when I reached Timor Leste, of course, I was given training and I was allowed to explore and develop my experience in the teaching field in particular. And I genuinely enjoy working with people. So being a volunteer here and in the education sector was a great fit for me. So I was very blessed where my first foray into humanitarian work was an area that I really enjoyed. But I think the main reason why I was successful in my transition to humanitarian work and my integration into actually a very hardcore social work team, the people in East Timor are very hardcore in social work. And I think one of the main things was actually my adaptability. And I went into the experience with a very open mind. So that really helped me. And when I moved back to Malaysia after a year, I honestly couldn't see myself going back to the corporate environment. So I actually continued with Seoul 24/7. And from being a teacher, I got seconded into management. And now I'm back on the ground with Seoul's AI.
So the word humanitarian gets used often, you know, but I don't think everyone is clear on what it actually means. Could you explain what is a humanitarian and how are they different from activists?
Well, to put it very briefly, a humanitarian actually can be defined as someone who is, you know, seeking to promote human welfare, while an activist is oftentimes seen as someone who is, you know, promoting change. Now, when you look at it from an outcome point of view, honestly, I feel there's very little difference between a humanitarian and an activist. But I think the difference or what people see as a difference is actually the type of actions that a humanitarian would take and an activist would take to get to the outcome, which is to change things for the better. So to give an example of a humanitarian, so a humanitarian would aim to, you know, save lives or relieve suffering or maybe maintain human dignity. Now, how a humanitarian would go about doing these activities would be, you know, in the form of maybe providing safety for refugees or in the form of rescuing, you know, people in a situation or providing shelter and food for the homeless. Even natural disaster relief efforts are considered humanitarian work, providing education. I mean, the list can go on. Now, an activist may want to focus on creating change in the policy or practice of a government or industry. Maybe not even that. They could actually, an activist also could be someone who's trying to persuade people to change their behavior directly rather than go through and persuading the government to change laws. They could actually go to the people directly as well. So in terms of an activist, to give an example, this could be participating in a demonstration for gender rights or, you know, for example, the recent Black Lives Matter demonstrations in the US is a very clear example of activism. But if you want to talk about getting people to change their behavior directly, it's like a very great example is using social media to promote reducing plastic waste. Or even if you speak up when someone makes a prejudice statement, that's an activist action as well. So when I look at both activists and humanitarian, I feel that the ultimate outcome is change, you see. So there is, in that sense, little difference. Both want the welfare of people, animals, and environment to improve. Both want equality, unity, and to help create a better world. It's just that the way they do it might be slightly different. That's it.
So Danusha, you do a lot of work in recruitment and raising awareness on your foundation. Now, while the path into humanitarian work can, of course, be very varied, can you explain how someone can seek a career in it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think the most important thing, if someone wants to get into the path of social work or humanitarian work, the most important thing is to actually get started, you know. That's the main thing. Just start. And the second thing is to become, of course, skilled in one or more areas which could benefit the cause that you're interested in. I think what a lot of people actually, the where the barrier is they're like, how can I get started, you know? I don't know what to do. So it's actually so simple, and anyone can do this. You can start with just looking at the community around you and trying to identify humanitarian issues that you can help address, you know. So if there's an orphanage near your house, okay, why don't I go and help with exam preparation for the orphanage kids, or a refugee school maybe. Even picking up rubbish, like doing your own mini gotong royong by yourself, that is actually addressing a humanitarian issue. So looking, having the eye or the mindset of, I want to find what can I help to improve. And what you can actually do is maybe speaking to people in the community or different organizations to find out what are their pain points and see what you can do to help. That's a very simple way to get started. If you want to jump into and just, you know, get your feet wet, go and volunteer. You don't have to go internationally to volunteer. You can do it here in our own, in Malaysia. Organizations are always looking for volunteers or people to do internships. So this could be for on the ground work or even digitally. You know, you could, we had last time volunteers who were digital volunteers, and they helped us with communications, marketing, design, you know. And nowadays with this COVID situation, even teaching online is a great way to volunteer. You can even, if you are, let's just say, someone who is already in school or you're already working for a company, why don't you pitch an idea and collaborate with your company or your school or an organization you're already working with to do a project with an existing NGO? You know, that's something that could be done. You can get involved that way as well. So you could be the champion in your organization to actually bring more CSR work. And be consistent, I would say. That's the next thing to do if you want to be involved in humanitarian work. Organizations need short-term and long-term solutions. But the important thing is in both those areas, you just need consistency.
What would you say are some of the key criteria to become a humanitarian worker?
So other than what we spoke about earlier, which is, you know, you must have experience or you must have some type of understanding of humanitarian work, hands-on work, I would say the key criteria to become a humanitarian worker is, honestly, it's about your mindset. And that makes the biggest difference, because anyone can learn a hard skill, but it's the way you approach your work, it's your soft skills that really define who you are as a humanitarian worker. A humanitarian has to really approach their work with the mindset of giving, with the mindset of, I'm going to do this not for clout or for me to get something back, but I'm doing it out of a like selfless reason. And only you would know if you're doing it for that reason. So don't focus on what you gain, focus on what the community can gain. And another thing that is very important is not to judge the people that you're trying to help, because that really shuts off beneficiaries from actually getting the most from actually benefiting the most. You know, empathy is so important, and it's so easy to do this. Just try to imagine yourself in that position, in the position of the people that you are trying to help, and then that's where you're able to better empathize with them. And another thing about being a humanitarian is that you have to value human life absolutely, without looking at race, gender, sexual orientation, culture, religion, because honestly, every single person deserves a life of dignity and free of suffering. So we cannot say, I want to be a humanitarian worker only for you. No, it has to be across the board. If someone needs help, they're able to help it. And I think the last thing, and this is for all organizations and all areas, is just because you're a humanitarian worker doesn't mean you don't have to behave professionally. We still need to follow the law. We still need to respect and follow the regulations of the organization you're working with. And you have to be very open to new experiences, because it is going to take you out of your comfort zone.
You know, Dinesha, salary might not be the main motivator in this line of work, but there is often a perception that being a humanitarian worker does not pay well. Could you comment on this?
Okay, so this perception is true. And just to be fair, it's not only in Malaysia, but even internationally, because to get started, many individuals would volunteer or do internships, which are usually unpaid. Some organizations do provide, you know, like small stipends, or they do cover food and accommodation, like the experience I had, in order to still provide, you know, committed individuals with the ability to sustain themselves while they are starting out. But there are humanitarian organizations that have achieved financial sustainability. This could be, you know, corporate foundations or other well-established organizations. And they are able to pay their team members, you know, like market rate for the skill set and commitment that they bring to the table. And retainment of talent is really essential when wanting to create long-term sustainable and positive change, because, you know, not everyone is going to be a fresh grad forever. You know, everyone's going to need to move on, have a family, need savings, plan for retirement, etc. So you can be paid well. It's just that you need a little bit maybe more time and also working for more established organizations as well.
And finally, you know, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the work that you guys do at Souls 24/7?
Well, speaking personally, when MCO was enforced, everything changed immediately. Because our work is very much done on a face-to-face basis, and everything had to stop. And we had to pivot as fast as possible and based on the, you know, restrictions by the government to try to move everything online, you know, where we could. So we actually started up a platform called Source 24/7/Education, where we had actually real life trainers teaching live classes every single day, morning to evening. And these are all our teachers from all the programs that we're running. And we just basically said, okay, we can't run it, so let's go online and open it up to our students and all the people that we were already teaching on the ground. Let's try to open it up now to wider Malaysia, because there were so many people who could not go to school or university and or even work. So we were trying to help them to upskill themselves before you know, MCO was lifted. And so we had great response there. And in another case, like just to speak about the program that I'm working on right now, the Salts Academy of Innovation, we can't bring the students back because social distancing is extremely difficult for a boarding school. So two of my teachers have actually gone back to the kampung, to the Orang Asli Kampung in Kelantan. We've got two teachers in two different villages, and they are actually starting classes there. So we can't bring the students to us. So now we are going back to them. It was a very, I would say, like, stressful time, but it's also, I always feel like, especially in humanitarian work, things are going to change overnight sometimes, and things will never go the way you want it to do. And the only word you can say for that is good. This situation happened to us. It's good because now we actually realized different things that we can do, you know, or different ways we could still achieve the impact we want in a way that we never would have imagined we could have done previously.
Thank you so much, Danusha. That was Danusha Katriana Singh, Managing Director of Souls 24/7 Foundation. And as she said, when it comes to humanitarian work, we can always start small and do what we can, even within our own communities. And if you need some inspiration, you can check out those comics we were talking about earlier, featuring various humanitarian workers as real-life heroes. They're available on the World Humanitarian Day website, www.worldhumanitariandaynet.org. So we'd like to hear from you. You can take our poll on Twitter at BFM Radio, where we are asking you how you support or help any humanitarian organizations, or you can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Stay tuned. After a short break, we'll be continuing the theme of World Humanitarian Day by looking at healthcare-related aid. First, here's George Harrison with Bangladesh.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.